Howdy folks, I'm your host Chris, and this is the third episode of Coming Out of the Emerald Closet. This is the last of what I'm calling the basement tapes, which are basically three interviews that I recorded back in 2015 that I was not able to publish since I had not yet learned my way around audio editing software and website design, which, by the way, I am still very much learning and would appreciate any assistance from any listeners who have any expertise in that area. The first episode was largely me dealing with the sound of my own voice. The second episode, my main lesson, my main takeaway from there, was stepping back and letting my guest do most of the talking. And in this third episode, I realized that one of the things I had been missing in the first two was a sense of fun and lightness. We got to the point where we were cracking jokes to one another and trying to get laughs out of one another, and that's the sense of lightness I'd like to have in these conversations. It's one of the reasons that I'll be doing some outreach toward both local and traveling comedians in the future, because not only is oratory their stock in trade, but they're also well practiced in the use of humor, which I would like to bring more of to the podcast. Now, David and I also brush up against some topics that in future episodes I would like to unpack a lot more. For instance, cannabis consumers whose partners don't consume. David and I both share that in common, but it was really more of a mention than an exploration. So that's something I'd like to return to with future guests. Another good topic is how to engage with prohibitionists constructively. By prohibitionists, I'm basically talking about anyone who's not already on board with cannabis legalization. In one respect, this podcast is about cannabis consumers coming together, articulating our stories, gathering our strengths and talents so that we can present ourselves in the most effective way to the parts of society that maybe aren't already on board. So while most of my interviews are us talking to us, I will eventually get around to how we can speak to the rest of society in the most effective way. And lastly, there was the idea of social media. How to engage in social media? How is our cannabis use reflected in our social media use? David and I both have somewhat conservative approaches, which you'll hear about in the episode. Neither of us are very big posters about cannabis-related media or about telling everyone what we do with our pipes every day. And before I let you go, there were just two things I wanted you to keep your ears out for while you're listening to this episode. The first is just one of those things I was glad to have caught on tape. And it's when David is talking about when he first moved to Portland and the first time that one of his new co-workers asks him if he smokes pot. Just the sheer relief and joy in his response to that person, even as he retells the story, I'm just really glad that I got that on tape. Yes! Yes, I do! Response. I just love the way that he sounds. And the last thing that I think is an interesting bit to keep your ears peeled for is just the arc of his transformation story as he goes from a booze drinker in his 20s to a pot smoker in his 30s. That's really, in my opinion, the centerpiece of our interview. He really walks us through what his life was like, what his life was changing into, and how he approached that change. And so if you're interested in transformation narratives, this has got a really hearty one for you to sink your teeth into. So that's it for the introduction. Now, let's join David and I in an August 30th, 2015 conversation at my own kitchen table. All right, today, it's a Monday afternoon, it's not September, it's August 31st, 2015, and sitting across the table from me is...
My name is David, I'm 34, father of one, and employee of a grocery chain, a very popular grocery chain.
Excellent. All right, so I was going to go straight into the stories of coming out of the closet, but I actually, before I forget, I want to ask you if anything, what has changed for you since July 1st when Measure 91 went into effect?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. Almost nothing for me personally. In the way that I've procured pot, in the way that I carried on my person, meeting my quote dealer, nothing has really changed. I've been pretty comfortable in my situation for some time. And so other than the fact that I visited a few friends who have started growing outdoors and things and watching that come along, very little has changed for me personally.
Cool. Yeah, I still procured it the same way.
Yep.
I smoked in my backyard before. Mm-hmm. I've got a fig tree. It makes nice shade. I can go out there with my journal. That's kind of my Saturday afternoon thing.
That was lovely.
And so at first, I didn't think anything changed. Like when you turn a birthday or something and you say, oh, I don't feel any different.
Totally.
This is the exact same. But I did notice that the next time I cleaned my glass and my bongs, where normally I would have slyly tuck them to my side in case my neighbors may have been outside. They just don't need to see.
You're not waving it in the air.
Yeah, right. Yeah, something I decided, I realized, oh, I don't have to do this. Oh, yeah. Like even, you know, and that was kind of the only real big change for me. I mean, there's still the morally, that doesn't mean they're going to look at me differently now than they did before. It was just cool. Like that was a little bit of a coming out. In the past, I've preferred not to inform my neighbors, just because of the stigma that we're all familiar with.
Sure.
And I've just kind of, unless something drastic happened where they presented something to me about them smoking and getting high, I just was just assumed them not know. So I always kind of hid it, never put too much energy into hiding it. Like, I'll smoke in my backyard. I'll take bong hits with the windows down and they can hear it. I'm sure they smell it.
Sure, that's easy to get.
And I grow it. I haven't shown you, but I've got a couple plants in the backyard.
Awesome.
And one of my neighbors did come over one time. Here, I'll tell you, this is a quick one. He came over because we have a tree that has giant branches that cover both of our, that are on top of both of our properties. Mm-hmm. And it got broke, and so we had to cut these branches.
Sure.
He's got the killer chainsaw, so he tells me one day over across the fence, hey, I can come over and cut those. And this was 2 years ago, and it was about this time, so it was, nearing harvest time.
Mm-hmm.
I just had a trench garden. I just had, like, four in a line, Connect Four style.
Yep.
Yeah, and he came over with brought his son, who was, I think he's in his early 20s.
Okay.
And it was such an elephant in the room. They just walked around them. We conducted our
engines.
Business, and I'm watching them like a hawk to see, like, does their eye contact go down? And if so, does it register? So he came over and they cut a couple branches, and then we kind of talked shop with these 4.5-foot plants next to us.
Yeah, just staring right at you.
Yeah, and I'm just like, are we going to mention this, or are we both content to just pretend it isn't there? But that's my neighbor on the north side. My neighbors behind me on the south, they're cool. They've smoked. I've actually gotten high with one of their friends who does groundskeeping work for them. I haven't smoked out with them yet, but I will soon, hopefully.
Absolutely.
And then my other neighbors across the street, I haven't had that conversation with them.
How far out do you think the circle goes as far as having to knock on doors and having that conversation? do you feel you're at home? Your immediate neighbor's fine, broach the topic if it presents itself, but overall, down the block, the next street over?
Well, I mean, my plants are there for anyone who, you can see them from the road, but you can't tell what they are.
Sure.
They just look like bushes. Green bush. Yeah, you can't tell. I mean, I'd kind of like to, but the thing is, I don't have a super deep social relationship with any of my neighbors.
Absolutely.
So I'd like to, and that's something I'd like to change. I'd like to actually hang out with them. And right now we smile and wave on the street. which is all fine and dandy.
Sure.
But, you know, it'd be cooler if I could actually, if one of us could, you know, it's Saturday night at 10:30 and you see the blue TV light coming from someone's living room. I'd like them to be able to say, like, oh, it's Chris probably watching a DVD. I wonder what's up. You know, he can knock on the door and I'm assuming I'll be taking bong hits. And, you know, and at that point, you know, I'd be like, it's Saturday night at 10:30. This is probably the most appropriate setting I can come up with.
Could be better. Yeah, I sort of aspire to have those relationships with my neighbors as well. But generally, I mean, I live in an apartment, so I pass a lot of people in the halls and see them in elevators and things. And I'm going on, like, 2 years of just, like, how you doing? Good to see you. Very casual. Wouldn't even know their name. A couple of people here and there. But overall, it's been pretty much, like, you know, come in. I use every part of the building, but I still... I don't know a lot of my neighbors too well. And there's a little bit of turnover, too, with different units and things.
Do you ever smell? Do you ever come out of your apartment and say, oh, well, at least someone on my floor smoked? Like, you
all
smell
the time.
It?
Okay. The whole building is like, is like a college dorm. I mean, it's a really nice building. There's a lot of, you know, there's a few families, but mostly just older professionals and things. But everywhere in the building, the basement, the second floor, first floor, sometimes you open the elevator and it's like, whoa. It just permeates throughout the building. So I'm aware, and the way I smoke in my house is, I mean, I just pop open a window. Sometimes even the blinds are open, and I'm sitting there rolling joints and smoking joints and treating it all very, very casual, you know.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever run into any of your neighbors in the hallway when you've been, pardon my language, high as fuck?
High as fuck.
Goofy grin.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, eyes as red as cherries, you know, just ridiculous. But it's usually just a slightly more awkward version of that, hi, how you doing? Good to see you. Mm-hmm. Maybe I stumble a little bit, or I say something that sounds funny in my head. And realize it has no contextual, you know, there's nothing there for them at all, and they're just looking at me sort of, and obviously completely aware, but I usually just excuse myself.
And they see you as like, see, I think that's cool, though, because they also see you as, oh, that's the dad.
Who runs around the building.
Yeah, that's the active father who does all the long-distance biking.
Totally.
So they have these kind of two things that you're not some couch potato slob.
Yeah.
They can say, like, he's physically active and he's active in his family life.
Absolutely.
So if he wants to be high guy, more power to him.
Maybe I'm making a good argument for it. Yeah. You know, my whole thing is like the normalizing of it. I always, you know, I mentioned earlier when I introduced myself that I work in a grocery store and we sell, you know, wine and things there. And I always just sort of refer to them as liquid drugs. You know, if we're going to call drugs, then those are liquid drugs. And I try and just treat my personal choice of what to consume as just a beer. You know, it's my little vice that I enjoy. Mm-hmm. And I also find it ultra therapeutic and just completely beneficial, and it's just all of these great things to me.
So that's interesting. You say you view it as a vice.
I guess I default to the word vice, perhaps.
Okay, because that's one thing I'm curious about, and I want to sort of tease out with more people that I interview.
Yeah.
Is okay, there's the idea that it's a vice, and the idea that it's medicine or therapeutic, as you said.
Yeah.
There's also the S word, the spiritual use.
Sure.
Like in Jamaica, when they recently decriminalized, and they said decriminalized for medical and spiritual use.
Yep, so the Rastafarians there.
One thing I want is, because that's a really general, vague term, so anyone I interview who does have either something as specific as a spiritual practice, or use the word therapeutic, and I'd really like to get to walk through a therapeutic versus a vice. I understand the vice thing. We see it in every movie that pot is in. It's a beer party.
Mm-hmm.
One of the people brings a joint. Two or three people join them.
Yep.
But it's an adjunct to beer culture.
Yep.
So what I'm looking for is, minus the beer, minus the, you know, socializing and celebrating are wonderful. But I'm curious, is there anything more to the therapeutic aspect that I could ask you about?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think...
Like the where and the when.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like a lot of times, my schedule, I'm an early riser. I get up early for work, and so just by the way my body works, on my days off, I get up extremely early as well. I usually get up before the sun, and it's sort of my ritual around that, my little Wednesday, Thursday ritual.
I'm going to open this real quick.
Yeah.
So that people, I guess all the, any listeners would know that when they hear.
I think they'd know.
That's me undoing my little mason jar.
Mason jar. It's beautiful.
So I'll pack the first pipe here.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Okay, so yeah, your Wednesday.
My Wednesday morning ritual.
Okay.
So you would get up, make a pot of coffee, and then roll a joint. And just sort of have a couple of cups of coffee, smoke that joint, and just kind of relax and kind of reflect on the week, kind of go into my head, kind of take a little bit of the anxiety that I can sometimes carry around with me and kind of process that and just sort of look at everything and say, you know, just, I guess, go back to just sort of process my week.
And is this you sitting in a chair indoors, or you do you have a balcony, or
I don't have a balcony. I've just got just my big kitchen window, and so I'll usually sit right there at my kitchen table, kind of similar to where we are right now, look out the window, kind of watch the world wake up, and have my little routine, my little ritual. That was a good one.
So another aspect of the podcast is modeling appropriate and effective use. And while there are a lot of more serious aspects to that, one of the less serious aspects will be you don't have to cough. Take a smaller bong hit if you're going to cough.
There it is.
We have plenty of pot, plenty of time.
Don't overdo it. Let's not redline it.
Don't hurt yourself. We're not here to hurt ourselves. Is that cash? Do you want me
I
to
think,
knock that out?
Yeah. Maybe.
And let me use your lighter real quick for hastiness sake.
But yeah, beyond that, I don't like to use it a whole lot as a kind of a get drunk kind of a substance. I'm always using it. I do, but I don't drink nearly as often as I smoke pot. Smoking pot is like sort of my primary.
That was kind of my thing. I was more of a pot smoker who drank than a drinker who smoked pot.
Yeah, I was, as a younger person, a drinker who didn't smoke pot at all. And
do you want this jar, or do you want to sample what's in front of you?
Why don't we try what you got open right there? That sounds good.
Okay.
Yeah. And I thought I was a drinker and realized pretty quickly that, you know, through my 20s, that it just I couldn't handle the hangovers and just all the residual things that go along with nights out drinking.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of tapered off my drinking habits a fair amount as I got a little older. And
so when did the marijuana?
Yeah, that's
alcohol,
funny.
When did that over? So I'm assuming you overlapped for a little bit.
Absolutely, absolutely. The pot smoking, you know, for me was. I'm gonna hit this real quick. Right into that.
All right. I started smoking pot before I drank, and certainly by the freshman year, me and my two best friends, like, we all had a taste for alcohol by the end of our first freshman year, but we were mostly pot-smoking acid freaks. Well, I can't say we, because my best friend, you know, never took psychedelics, and he stopped smoking pot after a traumatic ride to a Jane's Addiction concert.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Someone in the car dropped a really large bag and didn't realize it. They were all, like, smoking in the car and being really... My friend was freaking out.
Sure.
Because they had all gotten high before. And then they were, you know, I went in a different car. In his car, they were continuing to... They kept it going, like, the ride there.
Yeah.
Stoplights, you know, like, in Virginia, you can't put it right up to your face at a stoplight. But
no.
That's what they were doing. And so my friend was a high guy in the back freaking out.
Yep.
I won't go into the whole thing, but, like, just one funny thing was, so, you know, they go into 7-Eleven, and my friend doesn't even want to get out of the car. He's like, there's going to be a cop in there.
Freaking out, man.
You know, he's still, yeah, he's at that point where people, if people see you high, they will call a cop.
So
you're going to be busted.
Yeah.
which isn't that far from Virginia culture in the early 90s. But the thing that killed him was that they left, and he was like wiping his brow. And then one of them said, oh shit, I dropped my bag. We need to go back and get it. And my friend was just like, you're a fucking idiot. If you go back in there as high as you are, as high as all of us are, to him it was the most preposterous idea he'd ever heard.
Absolutely crazy. Yeah.
And yeah, and it got him off. You know, he didn't smoke again.
And that was it. Scared straight.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Oh, boy. Got him. Yeah, for me personally, I came right out of the D.A.R.E. program, you know, when I was a kid. Loved making the posters, No Hope with Dope. You know, one hit, you're dead.
Right.
And I had almost zero frame of reference for drug culture and all that. My parents are a couple of the most sort of straight-laced.
Me too.
No, not a sip of alcohol. I mean, wine occasionally at a wedding. No cigarettes. You know, never taken a puff of anything. And so I was raised by those two and kind of had this sort of raised Catholic, kind of, you know, sort of demonizing certain things and putting a lot of trust in things and what my parents had to say, which is great, you know, but just had no idea about it. So when I was given those first couple of opportunities in high school to try pot and things like that, I came into it really afraid, really scared, really like, I don't know, this is like, you take one hit and your life is ruined. You know, it's over.
You're permanently changed.
I've seen the commercials, man. I've seen them crack that egg into that frying pan.
So you're getting from your parents, you know, who are teetotalers,
Teetotalers.
Yeah. And then you start drinking but not doing quote-unquote drugs?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So the first things that we experimented with as kids were like beer and cigarettes. You know, somebody stole a pack of cigarettes from a liquor store or had their older brother buy them for them or something. And then beer was the same way. We'd sit out in front of a liquor store with a handful of cash and try and convince some older guy or whatever to go buy us, you know, 12-pack of Natty Ice or something.
Officially known as shoulder tapping.
Shoulder tapping. Excuse me, sir. Do you have a moment?
Yeah.
I'm not a solicitor. I just want beer. But as a kid, you know, as a 15-year-old, in my mind going, well, like, you know, this is just, like, I'm obviously too young for this, but, like, there's nothing wrong with this stuff. I mean, it's, like, both legal stuff. You know, I'm just too young to consume it. So I was like, yeah, no big deal. Like, you're going to grow up and start taking this stuff anyway, so, like, let's get into it. And so definitely got into drinking more than anything else and, you know, tried and failed to start smoking cigarettes several times between the age of, like, 17 to, like, 28, and just never stuck, always grossed me out.
It took me a concerted effort.
Yeah.
I really wanted it.
I'm trying to start.
I'm trying to start?
Trying to start, yeah. Thank you.
See, when you're 17, that's a hilarious thing to say.
But it's just so cool, you know, to smoke cigarettes, you know?
If you look cool smoking, I caught myself in this plate glass side of a building, and I was like, and the wind was blowing, and I had long hair, and I was like, I know I'm gonna look, as I'm inhaling, I'm like, I know I'm gonna look so fucking kick ass.
Yeah.
And then I saw myself and was like, I look kind of like a dickhead. You know,
who's
like,
the asshole?
Yeah, who's this? Who's hanging out with this douche? Oh,
yep. Oh. And that was it. That was it.
You know, but then I just, you know, I was like, I really gotta try to perfect that.
Yeah.
I have to work on my, you know, my smoking presentation.
Absolutely.
But I just love smoking. Anyway.
So. Yeah. Well, lucky for me, it never stuck. But, you know, I drink and, you know, I was 20, 25, 26, and just bar culture, hanging out with buddies. We'd, you know, go downtown, hit the bars, do the crawl, eventually get cab home. And then after a while, this is as I'm a little older, actually. This is as I'm about 28.
Oh.
And this is sort of when pot comes into my life. I guess, you know, I could go back to high school and say that it was offered to me. I would occasionally take a little hit, but never really commit to it. Maybe never quite inhale it. Never really felt the effects of it. And just kind of saw it as, I don't know. It's not for me. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work on me.
And would this be when you were drinking?
Yeah.
Okay.
And, yeah, this is me just, you know, drinking Coors Light like any other high school kid.
Sure.
And that would be, like, the primary focus and the fun way to get inebriated and have a good time as a kid. But the pot, I kind of went, and still had that kind of, as I mentioned earlier, that D.A.R.E. program, kind of like, hero for the, you know, a drug-free America kind of kid. And so I was fine with it. The hiatus began. I mean, I was like, pot's not for me. Then moving in with some buddies, doing that sort of bar scene I talked about earlier, where just do the pub crawls and all that, end up taking cabs back home, and eventually we would, one guy would pull out the bong and be like, you guys want to finish off the night with a nice bong whip? And I thought, God, I hadn't done that stuff in forever, and it never really worked on me, but would occasionally take a hit and started really liking the effects. Like, I don't know if it was coming at it from a different angle or being a little older or having a little bit of life behind me, but I just sort of fell in love with it again, and that became the primary.
Even through, like, a haze of, like, pub crawl?
Even through the haze of a pub crawl, there was light. There was enlightenment.
Wow. I always used to get uptight when I was younger, and my introductions were through, like, literature and art, because that was the only... There was no people, no living people would ever talk to me about it.
Yeah.
Except to say, like, don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
But then as I got older and I saw other people whose introduction to it was, hey, man, we're all so drunk, we should fucking smoke weed.
Yeah.
You know, and then I was like, no! You know, a voice in my head would be like, that's not how you do it.
Yeah, you're ruining it.
Like, don't play like a chunk into the game.
Yeah.
I just think that that's interesting because I know a lot of people who would only smoke pot when they were really drunk.
Yeah, it's like, I have a cigarette when I drink.
You know,
I smoke pot when I'm drunk.
And I had friends who would do that, and like, I remember would throw up, and then they would blame the pot. And my relationship with pot is it kind of seems to tell my body like what it needs or what it. And I kind of have this idea that it wouldn't surprise me if that smoking pot did quote unquote make you puke because it sensed that there was a horrible.
You got a belly full of toxins.
Yeah, right. Yeah. There was all these toxins, and it said, "We don't. This doesn't work for us. Get this shit out of here.
Get it out.
We're pissing out as quick as we can. And, you know, like this.
We're gonna have to go to Plan B. Go ahead and just right back up the chute.
Right. Yeah. You know, and then they'd be like, "Oh man, pot makes me puke," and I'd be like, "You know what? Wild Irish Rose makes you puke."
Exactly.
Thank heavens the pot got that shit out of your belly.
Yep.
Okay, so you take it, you know, you kind of take it as, I would call it an offshoot of alcohol culture.
Yeah, kind of like just
that was my
keeping the party going.
Yeah, that was my beef with it. I was like, pot is its own thing. It's not alcohol plus.
Yeah. Totally. And what it changed for me would be like when I would get up in the morning and be like, I got the day off. Maybe I'll take a hit of weed, you know? This maybe will be great. And when I started sort of doing things, you know, being active, like going on a bike ride or like going to the grocery store or whatever, I was just able to sort of see the world in a completely different way. And it was like this little adjustment to like myself and my psyche that like helped me be just sort of a better, more friendly, more fun to be around person. In my life, I mentioned earlier, I had kind of, I use it sometimes to kind of quell anxiety. It's the best thing for that for me. It's like a perfect fit. I smoke a little weed, I can still go out and do things, I can concentrate on spending time with my son, who I watch whenever I'm not working, we're together. And it just makes our experiences sometimes a bit more interesting and engaging and just so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
Legos on pot, man.
I mean, just zoning out on something.
Absolutely. Hyper-focusing on something.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's the same thing. I would, you know, zone out on a piece of music I was listening to.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you can also zone out on building Legos with your son, you know, or like whatever. Or you can go out in the backyard. And I've read about people being playing before they smoke. And I remember like, okay, now it's time to shift into play mode. And your adult brain doesn't always do that. I mean, it's easy to do now because...
an inhibitor.
Yeah. But you're just like, oh, yeah, how do you play? And someone goes, some kid would give me, like, one piece of information. And I would stand there, like, stubbornly demanding more information in order to get me into this game. I don't know the game you speak of until you clearly spell it out.
Who is this character?
After you get high, maybe, then you can kind of go, like, fuck it. That's all you're giving me? I got tons of shit I can fill in for the rest. It's on.
Got it.
Right,
yeah.
You know?
Perfect. Love that. Love that.
I think that's the first crack in the whole marijuana consumers can't be responsible parents stereotype is
yes.
That people are starting to do that and they're starting to either see successful parents who smoke pot or smoking pot themselves and saying, well, I thought this would detach me somehow, and yet here I am now hyper engaged.
I feel closer. I feel more in the moment. Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad you brought that, the whole idea of sort of normalizing it and, you know, the parent-child interactions, because I think about that a lot. I think about how I'm perceived by people. It helps that, yeah, I'm super active and our life is pretty, I don't know, we've got a nice routine. We see a lot of the same people. I seem to be, at least I hope I'm perceived as a thoughtful parent who's attending to his child's needs.
You know what, man? I remember telling my wife when we were raising our son, and he's 3 or 4, and we're wondering if we're doing it wrong and all that. And actually, even before he was 3 or 4, I remember thinking to myself, you know what, man? It's not about not making mistakes. It's just being there to make those mistakes.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You won't make mistakes every single time.
Sure.
But I got on this big kick of saying, the only way to be a bad parent is to not be a parent.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, not, of course, entirely true.
Well, someone said something to me that resonated. They said, if you're worried that you're being a bad parent, you're being a good parent because you're aware that there's a possibility that you could be a bad parent.
Yeah,
so you're probably attending to that in the moment, and you're just got all of that anxiety about that is just...
And it's cool having a partner who doesn't smoke or get high or drink or anything, because it's good to have her to check things with if I do get insecure and I think, maybe I can't tell. Maybe I am just an addict who wants to keep getting high, you know?
Yeah, maybe I'm just this creep who's in the kitchen or putting in, going to the bathroom for a bit.
Or even worse, I'm going to be in the living room. You can be wherever you want in the house.
This is Dad's chair. This is my goddamn house. No.
My goddamn half hour.
I have a similar situation with my son's mom. She didn't really smoke at all. She wasn't dark on the idea. She just didn't really do it. So it was interesting having that dynamic in the house sometimes where I would treat it something as like a big part of my day. I smoke in most cases daily. I'll take breaks from time to time. But for the most part, it's just kind of integrated into my life and how I like to live it. And so having her there, be sort of the opposite, it's a good kind of, I don't know, sort of...
It's like a balance, but I don't feel like things are out of balance.
I want to say counterbalance, but I'm like, no, I don't feel like I'm off kilter.
It's this fear that I feel we've been kind of taught. It's supposed to be out of balance. If it's in balance, that's rare. And I don't agree with that.
Absolutely.
Most of the parents I know who smoke pot they run in my circles, so I don't see so many of the irresponsible pot-smoking parents.
Well, and it's like the same problems you have with an irresponsible pot-smoking parent, you have a problem with an irresponsible parent at all. Like, whether they're drinking too much or looking at their cell phone the whole time they're watching their kids or not watching their child's part.
And I do think
any of those things, you'd be like, fuck this person.
I do have a fear that sometimes the cannabis community can be a little bit overzealous in its refusal to acknowledge how people use pot irresponsibly sometimes.
Totally. It's like this, it's a miracle. And you're like, people can be assholes with it, though.
Yeah. And you know, and if you bring something up and they shift it to alcohol or something.
Absolutely.
I think that you can use pot for anything you want to use it for. And if you're in some kind of a downward spiral, you can run yourself ragged with it.
Yep.
And hopefully, by its very nature, it will wake you up to what you're doing. And to be a little radical, I would rather someone do that with marijuana than with prescription drugs. If someone has a big problem with sobriety and they're just not into handling it for whatever reason,
do it fine.
Yeah, I'd really rather you wake and bake than like grounds for Vicodin or whatever.
Or hustle
or something, you know?
Yep.
Sounds like a real backwards advertisement to say, if you're going to be strung out on this, you know. But that was how I phrased it to my friend. I said, he was asking me about a friend, and he was like, she smokes, like, all the time. Like, it's clearly to cope. She even says it's to cope.
Yeah.
And that was, he and I kind of talked about it, and I was like, if she's got a beef with sobriety, for sure, handle that. But if you just need to, if you're processing some trauma, sobriety just isn't going to be your thing for the next few months, I'd much rather you do it through a bong than through a bottle or through whatever dangerous behavior.
Yep. Well, I will say, and maybe this is venturing off a little bit, but it reminded me, I had a kind of traumatic event happen to me in the early times I started smoking pot. So I'm a couple years in, still very casual. I'd never purchased it myself. I'd always just kind of been around my buddy who had some, hey man, do a bong rip, something like that. But I'd never procured it myself.
You were raised on bong hits, that sounds. I find that interesting.
It's bong hits. We, you know, it was a huge house, 6 roommates. We
had I keep forgetting you're not in high school. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, this would be like college years. Oh. Okay. So I didn't really go to college. I went to like a community college.
A bong behind every couch.
That's right. Absolutely. A bong behind every couch. So in my early 30s, so a couple years, a few years in, but still very casual, I was playing softball, which I would play in the evenings, old man leagues, soft pitch, big arc.
There you go.
Yeah, good times. And I ran into another player trying to shag a fly ball. His knee went into my rib cage, broke my rib, went right into my spleen, and I ended up having to get emergency surgery to remove my spleen and a bunch of internal bleeding that was going on. Yeah, dude. And so it was horrible. But when I came out of it, came out of surgery and had to go home and rest up for a few weeks, I was prescribed a bunch of heavy pills, of which I tried that first day and was just not into it. Like, it gave me a weird, foggy feeling. Didn't like it, but was still in a bunch of pain. At that point, I started using pot for pain relief and anti-inflammatory effects and things like that. And that really started, like, the daily smoking for me. Like, it was like, oh, this worked great. I bounced back. I feel even better than before. This is an easy decision to make, and I started buying sacks and here and there, and you know, now it's developed to the point where I've got this regular twice a month meetup spot, and I go to my dealer, who's a mother of three kids, and her and her husband have been growing medically for years, and now they've got an operation up in Vancouver, and it's all very wholesome, and I bring my son along sometimes, and he'll, hey, how you doing? Mm-hmm. And ride on home, and just the routine is the routine. It's so nice.
I think the child interface is going to be one that's going to take a while socially to cool out. I think that those of us in the cannabis community, you know, we know what irresponsible parenting looks like, and we know what responsible parenting looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Even people, we've all seen people raise kids very well while getting stoned regularly.
Yep.
But I do know that that's the rest of society's fear. One of their primary ones, and I have a feeling that one's going to take a long time to get over. The whole, like, fear of the youth is kind of I mean, I'm sure we all have it in one way. So now I'm combing my own mind. Mm-hmm. Like, what do I have that about? What do I have about?
What do you have? Yeah, do you have, like, the...
My son's too impressionable for blank. Like, how do I fill in that mad lid? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that would completely take me out of our podcast.
Absolutely.
I'm not going to
take that. That's a road, yeah, there's lots.
And I do think that that's kind of like a really big, it's great to talk about how similar we are, cannabis consumers and non-consumers,
mm-hmm.
but I do think that like the quote-unquote exposure to children, I mean, even that word sounds like hazardous material, you know?
Well,
like,
and it's because of the way that we sort of categorize everything, though. Like we call, you know, you have the word drugs, and most commonly it's paired with abuse, drug
sure,
abuse.
Sure.
And so it's looked at as a negative right off the bat, or it's looked at as sort of a, you know, just a way to get high, just for the sake of getting high. You know, it's looked at negatively in society as a whole, even still. They'll say things like, you know, they can have their fun. Yeah, it's great. I'm glad it's legal, but you know, whatever.
Well, what is, just so we don't go too into opinions, how old was your son? You have a son and a daughter, correct?
I have a son. Just a son.
How old was your son the first time he, even saying exposed is...
Like saw me smoke or saw me handling...
Well, I'm trying to think of, because with my son, it happens so slow.
Yeah.
The first thing was, I'm on the computer, I have this bowl piece.
Yep.
Which has this cute little frog,
mm-hmm.
and it slides in, you know, and it makes such a great sound.
Yeah. Very nice phone, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah. But before he even played with that, he would just come out and see it, and all he would see was this side, which is just blown glass art. You can't even tell it's a...
You're looking at a vase, yeah.
Yeah. And then he saw that, and this, you know, the sound of glass sliding on glass. You know,
and how old is he at this point?
He's crawling. I mean,
okay,
he's,
so he's
you know,
just a toddler.
Yeah, he's under two. I mean, you know, and I didn't say, oh, this is daddy's, what do I call it? I didn't even go into that because it hadn't gotten to that.
Yeah.
And just a while later, he sees it next to, you know, like a jar.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, what are green things in a jar? And I go, actually, it's a flower. I know it doesn't look like one.
Yep.
But it is actually technically the flower of a plant.
Yep.
and I leave it at that. I don't go into a whole, you know, rap about, you know, it's psychoactive.
Yep. And, they're completely similar stories in that respect.
But. And it was just like, he doesn't really ask much about a pot-related question. He hasn't asked in a while.
Interesting.
But, yeah, in the first, like 7 years, maybe like every 6 or 8 months, there'd be the next tier. First it was, what is this? And I tell him, like, oh, it's a pipe for smoking. You know, the smoke goes through the water. I remember I said the smoke goes through the water, and I lost him.
Yeah.
Already, he was like, he was just uninterested.
What are we talking about here?
He's like, it's pipe. Okay, I'm working on a pipe, buddy. You know, like, don't give me all this, you know, hydration system business.
Yeah.
So,
keep it simple, Bob.
Yeah.
The long and the short of it.
And I was like, well, I totally recognize it, and, like, actually stopped, and I was like, oh, yeah. Shouldn't lay into them all.
It's only to convince
lecture.
Sister.
Yeah, and eventually, over the years, over the months, it became, you know, why do people, he didn't ask me why I did, he said, why do people do it? And then, what were some other questions he had? There was the scary one where he said, like, when am I going to be able to?
Oh, that's a tough one.
But it was great because we had such a foundation of stuff. Once he found out that smoke happened in here, which was a while, I could say, like, it's a pipe.
Concept,
he doesn't know it's, burning something to inhale it does not occur to anyone at that age.
Yep.
By the time he asked me about it, he already knew what smoke was. He already knew that smoke, inhaling any smoke, was unhealthy.
Yeah, well, sure.
And
you're getting that information. That information is available.
So he knows that it's an instrument for smoking. He knows that smoking is unhealthy. He knows that, and then at another previous conversation, we had talked about what does it do.
You know, this is actually reminding me so much of my conversation with my mother about a month ago. But go ahead, please.
And,
same questions.
But it was cool because it also kind of helped me tighten up my whole scene.
Yeah.
You know, and get my act together. He says, like, well, why do you do it? And so then I'll be like, oh, yeah, I've had pat responses to that question. Achieved very defensively when I was a teenager that I've been using. But no, let's like really look at this.
Absolutely.
Do I smoke pot the same way I did as a teenager? No.
Not at all.
No. So yeah, clearly I have different intentions and different occasions. Mm-hmm. And it was cool to kind of, I remember telling him, I broke it down. I think I had 3 different occasions. And I was like, sometimes it's to meet up with friends who've traveled long distances.
Whoa. Cool.
We come together, we make a cloud, we have a cup of tea.
That's a good argument. It sounds very sort of Lord of the Rings. I'm into this. I'm picturing New Zealand. This is great.
Another time is Saturday night relaxation with a DVD.
Mm-hmm.
So I go, I'm watching a movie, and I'll just have one puff and then watch a movie. And then the third might have been like a spiritual practice or something like that. And
absolutely.
I try really hard not to get too detailed.
It's way too heavy.
Yeah, and I also don't want to, maybe I'd be searching for validation from him in a weird way. I don't want to get into that whole space.
Is that okay, buddy? Is that okay?
Yeah, right? I mean.
Yeah, so your dad, right?
Yeah.
We're cool, right?
We're friends and I'm your dad.
Hey, man. Totally.
By the time he said, when am I going to be able to, it was like, well, you know the effect that it has on your body smoking. You know that it has an effect on your mind.
Yep.
I think that's what I told him. He said, what happens or why do you do it? And I told him, like, it has an effect on your body. It has an effect on your mind. I don't even think I said spirit. I think I just left it at the two.
I think body and mind is pretty solid, yeah.
But just to let him know that it covers a little bit more than you might originally.
But you're also just, you're giving him information. You know, it's this idea that, like, you know, this is an adult thing, and we'll talk about this at some other time. Like, you have the information. Just give him the information. Perhaps at a point in his life where he could absorb it and get something from it. But at the very least, you're just sharing what you know. That's good.
I was like, so since it has an effect, you know, smoking anything will have a bad effect on your body.
Yep.
And the marijuana will have an effect on your mind. Most people decide to wait until their body and their mind are done growing, and then they feel more comfortable starting to see if they're interested in marijuana and smoking it or whatever.
Yeah.
And he was just like, okay, turn around and went over to what he was doing.
Yep.
And
you normalized it. You just had a normal conversation.
Yeah. He sees me using what I would call responsibly.
Yep.
And then he sees, we go to the park and he sees people using what I would call irresponsibly.
Totally.
We've had a couple short, I wouldn't even call them conversations about it, but where we've kind of mentioned it and just been like, I think he asked me one time, he said, were those people smoking marijuana?
Yeah.
And I go, yeah. And I think he just, you know, he heard a little bit from my tone. And then I think like 5 minutes later, he said something else. But it wasn't even like a why. It was just like, did I see that kind of a question?
Just acknowledging.
And I was just like, yeah, you know, some people, you know, I don't know, they drink a lot of alcohol. Some people do. I don't remember what exactly I said, but it was something to the effect of like, some people use marijuana well. Some people use it unwisely. Some people, it's neutral and doesn't have much of an effect on them either way that we can tell, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But just kind of like, it can be any of those things. It can be, you know, it can handicap you. It probably won't, especially by the time you're a teenager, it'll be a lot more normalized.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, as far as...
But I mean, I don't really see him even using it as a teenager at this point, you know. I just don't...
Well, it's sort of an interesting thing. Like, it's, you know, with the...
I mean, I can and I can't. It's yeah, either way. It's either way.
Totally. But I mean, just also with the, you know, our generation of parents being more open about it and talking about it, maybe it's makes it a little less provocative and, then, you know, sort of interesting to a teenage kid who's trying to do, you know, rebellious things and trying, you know, illicit things and that sort of thing. Knowing that it's just that flower that Dad smokes at home and has my entire life, maybe it's whatever.
See, the funny thing is, I think he's so uninterested in it. I think if someone asked him, he probably wouldn't be able to tell him a whole lot. It just seems like so unpriority to him.
Well, yeah.
It's just, I think to him, it's just like adult stuff. It's like talking, it's like landscaping. Like,
sure.
It's like talking about
sure.
your plans for your garden. You know?
Or beer is gross. Why do people drink this stuff? Why do grown-ups drink this stuff? There's, you know, there's Dr. Pepper.
I know. You got root beer, dude.
There's plenty of root beers in the fridge.
The lemonade is in that pretty jar.
Man, it's so sweet. So good.
It's sweet and it's tart. You gotta get in on this. You gotta get in on this, dude.
Yeah, yeah.
So we've had capital C conversation has mainly been a lot of very short lowercase C conversations.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You ask me a question, I answer it, and I'm open to, like, if he's going to throw anything else out at me. Most of the time, he doesn't.
Yeah.
Most of the time, it is just quick. What is that? It's a cigarette. Okay. You know.
Makes sense. I mean, yeah, he's obviously at a point in his life where other things are way more of a priority, you know. School and toys and video games.
Am I hogging this over here?
Get in there. It's been interesting, though, for me. My son is 4, and so there hasn't been a whole lot of, like, really specific back-and-forth questions and answers. Just more me always having, you know, a small pipe or rolling papers or a jar of, you know, mason jar of pot, sort of sitting on the kitchen table or sitting on the counter, or maybe he comes around the corner and I'm putting it back in the kitchen cupboard. And so he's kind of always been sort of aware of it, and I try not to smoke in front of him. In fact, I'm pretty good about that. I'll usually go to the bathroom or go to the other room in the house and, you know, take a puff or two and get back into it. But every once in a while, you know, he'll, especially now as his language is developing more, he'll say things like, "What's that?" And I kind of defaulted to, I called them vegetables initially. That was like a gut reaction. They're vegetables. They're vegetables. They're daddy's vegetables. And so now he just goes, "Oh, those are daddy's vegetables." And he's, in the same way as you mentioned with your son, he's kind of disinterested, like, whatever. Oh, that's interesting. Once or twice, I may have left, like, a glass pipe on the counter, and I would come around, and he'd be holding it and maybe doing, like, a miming, like, a horn motion. And that kind of freaked me out. So I went, "Oh, God!" And I just look at it, and it just looks like I'm just completely strung out, and I got my kid, and I just need to hold on to that pipe. I just felt like the biggest sort of dirt bag, and I don't know why. Like,
it's the dare training, man.
It's that perception of it I still have in me. I'm
yeah.
still judgmental of that.
Yeah.
You know, but for the most part, I'm not, but occasionally it'll come out of me that sort of like, "Oh, this feels good, Lord. What's this come to?" So yeah, I'm interested to see as he gets older and as I, you know, just sort of continue the lifestyle that's working really well. I'd be interested to see the conversations that are to come. You know, having those, I feel really educated by what you just told me about your conversations. They seem so plain and simple.
Yeah, it's amazing how hard it is to keep them so plain and simple.
But it's so great.
But it's so charged, you know?
Sure, it's something you're passionate about. Yeah, you could talk about it for,
you know,
ages.
He asks the question right after I've freshly finished smoking. The high is still coming on. I get nervous that I'm not going to give the right answer, and then I have to kind of recognize that, throw that out, and then just be there, and then it comes out, you know?
Yep. It's that paranoia, man.
Dude, yeah, we had that. Oh, man, that came in so hard. I mean, yeah, paranoia is a, that's kind of a drug term, a dope term.
Yeah.
At least that's how, you know, no one ever mentioned it unless you were talking about mental illness or first person drug reaction.
It's a little skittish. He's paranoid, that one.
Yeah. Was he paranoid?
Yeah. Ooh, yeah, exactly.
Dope.
Yeah. I like to think of the paranoia as the hyper awareness.
You know? Yeah, I mean, it's never, my paranoia wasn't unfounded, you know, but it just led to really bad decisions. It led to me saying, probably my worst dope, drug, whatever decision was, the likelihood of my mom finding this at home is too high. I'm going to have to take it to school with me.
Oh, God, here we go. Yeah.
Worst
I'll just leave it in the locker, it'll be fine.
Ever, but it's one I made out of, and that paranoia was real, because I did get those, you know, occasional, oh, I just happened to find this, or I just happened to hear you on the phone, and then I'd suddenly be accountable for some, I was like, what?
Yep, yep.
But,
Yeah, carrying it on your person, man, as a kid.
So dumb. So dumb.
God. Yeah, it's every once in a while. That's another thing, like, we talk about sort of coming out to people and things. Like, for the most part, I'm a pretty open book with it. I discuss it at work quite a bit. I talk about it, like, yeah, you know, smoke pot at the end of the day, no big deal. I work at a grocery store with a lot of just really smart people, but just a lot of really enlightened cats who are hip to the weed. And it's no big deal, you know, bosses and associates alike. But what I was saying earlier was I happened to agree to help a friend move her couch one afternoon. And before that was where I was going to go pick up my little stash for the week. And so when I got to her house, I didn't even realize it, but I had my battle bag and my bike, and I had the ounce of weed in there. And it was just so ridiculously stinky, and it was great. It was the best ever. But it was like that same elephant in the room. You know, you're like, I got to mention it. Like, this is crazy. And so I never really had, like, direct conversation with her about it at work, but I brought it up then, and she kind of revealed that she liked to smoke a little pot, too. So, you know, had smoked a bowl right there and moved the couch, and everything was great.
Oh, wow.
It was awesome.
Wow, that's great, man.
And then she moved away. She was a cool person.
And she left forever. Yeah, maybe I should focus more on those kind of short-term coming outs than, like, the big ones. I'm going to see my parents this holidays.
Yep.
And if nothing happens between now and then, it's just going to come up naturally. Because that's how I think, that's how it goes for me, mm-hmm. how it's been going for me with my steps. It's just that there'll be some step that I just can't tolerate doing anymore. Like, I used to flip the books so that the spine would face, so that they couldn't read certain titles of certain books.
You yeah, know, like, yeah, it says a lot about you, your bookshelf.
Yeah, yeah. So there were certain pot-themed or psychedelic-themed books that I would flip around when they would visit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, eventually I just got, we were getting ready, we were cleaning the house for them to arrive, and it got to that point, and I was like, I was just through with it, man. I was just like, man, that's totally not fucking worth it. You know what? If they notice something, man, great. I'd love to talk to them
about it. Let's have a conversation.
Yeah. And I think it's flipped. I think my parent, or at least my mom, is the one who doesn't. He's just like, I'm not going to ask you what you're doing. Which, you know, when I lived with her and was getting, you know, and smoking pot at the end of high school,
yep.
felt like, you know, she was up my ass 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's just...
Smart.
Yeah, and I think that this winter break, it's going to be, there's just, I'm going to have to put an effort into changing my story.
Sure.
To leave that out. And I'm just going to be like, man, I want to fucking rework my whole story now. Fuck it. I'm doing a podcast or whatever, however it is. And so I'm trying to kind of find ways to needle it out of them, like, because they live right outside of D.C.
Sure.
And there's been a lot of progress there, so.
That's an interesting one to me, that the D.C. legalization.
They've taken a really interesting route, a different mm-hmm. route than us on the West Coast.
What did they do? Flip dispensaries?
They had this giant public seed giveaway.
Ah,
first
weird.
Of all.
Interesting.
And then I think they allow commercial transactions, money exchanges.
In retail environments.
Well, they don't have, I don't think they've,
so it's,
they
don't have person any to person.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
I think that they've kind of like accepted the person-to-person pusher economy.
Seems simple.
Which is so, like, to me, radical.
It's crazy, yeah.
But well, it's like, they look at us on the West Coast and think that ours is, you know, dumb and radical too.
Well, yeah, we have this very developed.
Not that I think that's a dumb move at all. I think it's really cool and I want to see how it plays out.
Very casual.
Yeah, you know, just kind of, and it's, I like it. It's kind of like, this is how it's been done. This is how it is done. I mean, if we're going to try and introduce a new model, you know.
Yeah, no, this is an established infrastructure. This is, yeah, you know, right? Good times.
That these networks are already here to serve the need. Get off your asses.
That's right. Just get off our asses. go after violent people, you know? Right. Like, that's all of these things.
But I remember I did ask them in an email once, does it change anyone's minds in Fairfax where they live? And
yeah.
It was just my dad. I don't think my mom responded. Kind of non-issue, like, no, I don't think so. Yeah. But I don't think it registered. It's funny. It complicates when I think of, I'm going to run into my best friend's parents across the street. How am I going to field pot queries over there? I can complicate it if I think about it too much.
Sure, absolutely.
But I kind of want to be prepared to.
Well, yeah, well-spoken, not preachy, not.
Short, just, yeah, like, again,
short,
keeping
like,
it short, not insultingly short, you know, like, I'm open to talking about it more, but probably only, like, two chunky sentences?
Sure, nice and tidy.
Something like, yeah, try to keep it tidy.
Sure.
But, yeah, I don't know how people's perceptions have changed. I haven't lived there since the fucking mid-90s.
Yeah.
I think of the public perception, and then they are part of the public. I mean, you can tell me nothing's changed, right? And it makes sense to me. Or you can tell me, hey, it's a different world now. And I can go, oh, yeah.
I think it's kind of somewhere in between there, you know? There's a lot of folks who maybe just don't care. Whatever. I still think it's bad, but if you guys want to smoke your pot, go ahead. You know, that's fine. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how it goes throughout the nation. I mean, we seem to be toppling over states one by one, and
Yeah, it's okay. I like the idea that it's going to be done in different ways in different regions.
Yeah, the grand experiment. Customs. Just figure it out.
Yeah. I was at a town hall meeting about cannabis policy.
Mm-hmm.
There was someone who was in the retail side of it, and they're asking public city planner people involved in the marijuana policy here in Portland.
The zoning and things?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why is there all this extra...
Regulations?
Yeah, regulations, stricter regulations.
Sure. Yeah, you're making it extra difficult for us.
From, you know, 1,000 feet from a school, 1,000 feet from another cannabis...
Yeah, we're not sex offenders. We're,
and they compare it to like those types
selling
of products.
Illegal. Well, we're selling illegal product that you can trade, and you're making it...
And and he was all like... You know, he really stuck it to him with this big why question.
Mm-hmm.
I just kind of remember, I couldn't help, I just wanted to be like, because not everyone smokes pot, dude. A lot of people are not totally comfortable. You know, they're kind of scared that we're going to take over, so we have to be easy and responsible.
They're fearing for their children.
This doesn't happen all at once. There are people who aren't wrong, who aren't uninformed.
Yeah.
You know, and that was kind of the thing. It was this one woman, this a concerned mother behind me.
Uh-huh.
She said, first she announced, you know, that she wants to walk with her kids in the park, and now there's people smoking pot in the park, and her kids are asking her, what is that? Which, to me, I'm like, sorry, you are going to have to learn how to answer that question.
That's what I'm saying. It's your responsibility to answer that question.
But let us help you in the cannabis community who fielded that question with our kids. A lot of us have different...
Yeah.
But anyway, so she said, you know, she mentioned that, and then later on, then there was a cannabis advocate behind me who was very snickery and very... throwing out hissy comments, you know, insulting ones.
Totally.
And it was like,
non-productive.
You're not
ones.
Winning anybody over. The mom in the back, she got on the mic later and she was like, I don't like being told that I'm uninformed.
Yeah.
I don't like being told that I'm like, intolerant.
Yeah, but you're attacking me.
Yeah, you know, like, don't sit here and tell me that, like, I just don't know it well enough yet.
Yeah.
And, I was like, that's a really valid concern. You know, don't treat me like I need more facts from you.
Absolutely.
That I need you to enlighten me. That relationship isn't going to, you know, nothing's going to get happening.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's a good show of sort of empathy to see things from another person's perspective and understand that, yeah, it's just... We'll discuss it as much as possible. We'll try and impart the things that we know and try and make the whole deal, you know, better for everyone.
Yeah. The retail, you know, the people who are, you know, setting up shops and facing all these shifting regulations and market saturation and all that. Ooh, retail sounds like a rough aspect. I'd like to get into the industry as like a dialogue facilitator or something, but like retail?
Sounds, yeah.
Growing, processing, wholesaling, retailing, all of that is going to be like, there's so many people are so well prepared to do it. I'm not going to set my first foot in the game right now.
No. Let's just yeah. The guys with all the capital will begin there.
I know.
$1,000. Yeah. Homestead. Yeah, it's gonna be wild to see how it all plays out. One thing that occurred to me, I was gonna mention it, and I don't know if it plays to me remaining in the closet, is I don't repost a lot of pot stuff. I don't do a lot of pictures on social networking and stuff. I just kind of keep that, if there's something I believe in that I read, and I might repost something like that. But it's not like there's a lot of big culture around taking pictures of the flowers and, you know, the sort of High Times kind of centerfold type of stuff. You know, look at that bud, that's a good looking bud. Mm-hmm. And you see a lot of that, and I've just never been that guy at all. Never been like that, ooh, man, like, feels like you're sharing porn or something.
That's ironically, this nub porn is actually...
Oh, perfect.
I know, isn't that like...
It just sounds, ooh, just sounds skeezy. Nub porn, two words that are just like, ooh. They're ugly words. Nothing beautiful about that. Except for the act itself.
Yeah, I'm definitely in the Facebook closet. I accidentally outed myself really badly about
just
3 years ago.
Just a ranting video of you just...
Well, I was going to a psychedelic research conference.
Okay.
And the organizers had said, we're going to have 10 literal, like, round tables for discussion. You know, and I was like, ooh, I'm going to pre-plan the discussion and then hit the ground running. I don't even have to look around for people who want to talk about... And it was like the emerging cannabis industry in the Pacific Northwest.
Uh-huh.
And the other one was psychedelic parenting.
Yeah.
And so I made these two Facebook groups.
Uh-huh. Oh,
and I posted I posted them to the event page for the conference.
Yep.
And I had no idea but it was cool. I learned that because a bunch of my friends liked it. So I was like, wow.
Yes, I do believe that.
But then, so I basked in that for a second, and then in came the realization that, like, oh, shit, people who...
Grandma's on Facebook.
My thing is people who condemningly called me a drug consumer back in the day,
mm-hmm.
and now I'm Facebook friends with them, and, you know, the idea of, like...
We were right.
Like,
the whole time.
You know, that whole, like, man, that I just... I'll have to face, I'll have to face that eventually in my life, but I'm just like, what a groan, man.
Yep, it's a whole mess.
I believe everyone who tells me that I'm going to feel so much freer and lighter, and once I do, you know, I don't feel that that's incorrect. I agree with you. I'm sure I will.
Yeah.
I'll be who I am and all that. I've heard about this being who you are business.
Being your true self. One layer. You. Truth. Present. Getting into smoking pot regularly, you know, at 28, and then, you know, not having much experience before, I went to YouTube how to roll a joint. And I saw a couple of really informative videos, and they informed my style. And I started off a little shaky, but I'm very proud of my joint rolling skills now.
Yeah.
I have to say. A couple minutes in and out. Yeah.
God, I remember when I've been in Jamaica, I've seen dudes, I've watched this happen.
Yeah.
Just one hand. They're crumbling the bud like this,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then opening the paper. Now, I think they actually open it with the other hand, but just watching it happen like so quickly, so not paying attention.
Just
to it.
Muscle memory.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Oh my god, and a cone, no less.
And it just comes out looking great.
Oh my goodness.
I've got a buddy who can roll them like that. He'll be driving a car and one-handed, and I just go, man, I need ideal conditions. You know, I need a vacuum environment, zero air, and you know, it needs to be the perfect situation, the perfect amount of grind, just everything's got to be ideal. I can go off the rails really quickly. You know, if I don't get that first roll right...
Oh, boy, it's over.
It's you start falling apart, and, you know, ugh.
Trying to recover.
Yeah, I'm getting better, though. I'm getting better. And I prefer it. I like more so than just, like, a hit from the pipe, which is primarily the other way I smoke. I like just going a little bit deeper with the joint. Just a little bit... I know about 3/4 in, I'm like, oh, that's good. That's a spot. And I can either take that and just go right for the whole joint... And be like, nice. Listen to some music. Play with some Legos.
Or I can stop right there and be totally good to go do something productive. You know, go mail a package, go hit the grocery store, go ride a few miles.
All right. So you were, okay, so you're just telling me that there's like a pretty firm understanding where you work,
mm-hmm.
that some people get high, some people don't, some of those people are management, some of them aren't, whatever.
Yeah. And it's not like a thing, sorry to cut you off, it's not like a thing where it's tolerated for someone to be high at work. It's more so what you do in your free time is whatever you do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's not like it's like this culture of, hey, come on in, man.
Okay.
Let's get to work. We got thousands of pounds of stuff to move around. Let's get hurt.
Since I'm not out to my coworkers, I'm curious, walk me through, you're coming in and not knowing anybody, you're coming in and knowing that it's that some people smoke pot and you're getting high, from the beginning to getting high with a coworker.
Yeah, totally. Well,
like knowing that it was cool at what point and all that.
I guess I can start with, I moved up here, Portland, from Santa Barbara in California, where I'm from, about 4 years ago, and just transferred stores, so came in with the company. Was smoking pot pretty regularly at that point. I bought a bunch for my trip up. You know, we were taking 10 days to fill up a station wagon and take the long road and stop at the Redwoods and
nice.
Do all of those really awesome things. I mean, smoking a little pot with a bed of red bark and trees that are thousands of years old that are massive. That's
company.
A spiritual experience.
Yeah.
Like, that's
yeah.
excellent. So I get up here to Portland not knowing where I'm going to get pot. I knew I had a cousin in Salem. He was pretty cool. He was a couple years younger than me. He could probably hook some up. So the first couple of times, it was like me having to drive all the way to Salem to get some shitty weed, you know, late night and just everything inconvenient about it. And then working the night shift at the store, just every once in a while, you're kind of co-filling a shelf for the guy. And some guy happened to mention or ask, hey, do you smoke pot? And I was like, fucking yeah, I do, man. Like, absolutely. Do you know where we can get some? Because I had kind of run dry at that point from my trip-up stash, and I was a pretty regular consumer, and I'd gone down to Salem a couple times. It was really inconvenient, and I hated the drive. And so I was like, yeah, this is going to be great. This was like some 19-year-old kid, and he was like my only hookup.
And how old are you?
30. But, you know, we're co-workers. We're doing the same work. Like,
right.
I was like, yeah, whatever. I can hang out with him for a little bit. So, like, my next couple of sacks were like these weird situations where I'd have to meet him at his friend's house, and they were all 19-year-old kids, which is just the opposite way I like to smoke pot. Just all video games on and like loud, weird music that's not cool and not mellow, and just like we got to go in the car and we're all going to drive together, and like a lot of caravanning through weird neighborhoods. And so that almost turned me off the pot. I was like, fuck, man, maybe I can just start drinking again. I don't know, man. I really like to get high, but fuck, man, this is hard.
Are you at the same time going, I'm in Portland, fucking Oregon, and I can't get pot?
I was researching things like, yeah, maybe I can get a car, medical card or something, you know? And then I'm going, oh, fuck, I gotta go to the doctor twice. I gotta get x-rays. Come on, what are we doing here? So I just kind of bided my time and went with that for a little bit. But eventually, another coworker approached me. She's like, yeah, my family and I, we grow, we sell. If you ever want anything, let me know. The more you buy, the more you save. She had everything all set up. And it was like, what? Who's this angel? Thank you. Thank you so much. Ah, you speak so well.
I have books at your house.
Yes.
You have books.
Ah, tell us. Have you seen any great films lately? But yeah, she's been my dealer ever since. It's been like 3 years. And she's fucking awesome.
Whoa,
we go meet
good,
at this gluten-free bakery, meet in the parking lot, do the exchange, a couple of how-you-dos, and go our separate ways.
Cool. What do you pay for and when do you get, usually, if you don't mind my asking specifics?
Not at all. And I don't even know if I'm getting a good deal at all. I feel like I am. I usually get an ounce for like maybe a month, maybe 2 weeks, depends on whatever.
Joy's going through pot much quicker than bond.
Totally. Just a lot of wasted
just for
pot.
Those, for any listeners who might not.
Absolutely. Without a doubt. I look at it sometimes, I'm like, what am I doing? Just take a couple of hits? Nope. Nice joint.
Yeah.
I'm proud of it at the end. There's a process to it. Oh, so a 3 ounce, I paid about 180.
Okay.
Which I feel pretty good about.
Yeah, that's,
And then sometimes I go in on it with a couple of friends from work, and sometimes it gets cheaper that way, but it's just all built into the budget.
Nice.
It's grocery money.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's kind of like one of the cool things about as you age, I guess, as a smoker, you kind of settle into your thing.
Life is good.
Yeah. If nothing is obstructing it, then it's good. This is what I do. I write about, what am I? I think I was doing about, I was getting an eighth about every 5 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Back when I was getting eighths. And then a friend of mine knows a grower. He gets the $100 ounce.
Yeah. It's fucking great, man.
But yeah, I've been doing that. I did one of those in the beginning. I got a half in the beginning of summer, and then I just got another one.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's great, man.
Yeah. I mean, then that's, it's funny because I've been reading about Portland being like the pot land of plenty right now.
Sure.
It's funny. I just don't run in those circles. So I guess it's not, I have to read about it. I can't tell just by, you know, walking my life.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. The latest little batch I got was the first time I've gotten some from a dispensary, a medical dispensary. Another coworker of mine got his card. And so he was just sort of sampling different things from around the area. It's funny, interesting actually, when you talk about like the retail environment, which will open up in October. But for now, the card holder just can go anywhere.
Yeah, that's still
and
blows
can
my
be
mind.
Choosy and right. Can be like the aficionado, like, ooh, it's looking a little dry. I'm gonna go next door and see what they've got. And man, I got some really great stuff. It's a wonderful hybrid. Came in this great mason jar. It had all the information posted on it. It's so great. It was like this little preview of like what's to become.
Oh man, my dream for October 1st is that they don't consider hash a concentrate.
Yeah, well.
Do they?
I don't know.
I think they will.
Seems like they would.
Oh,
I mean, it kind of is, right?
It is, but when I think concentrates, I think of shatter and
sure.
All that business,
yeah.
You know, like all the dabbing, you know, accoutrements and stuff.
Dabbing, that's a whole other monster.
Yeah, hand-rubbed hash or like sift Moroccan-style hash. Or,
yeah.
You know, blonde or black hash. That's
any hash will do.
I've been to Amsterdam a couple of times. I get flour over here, so when I've been over there, it's just hash.
Would you say you prefer hash?
If I had nothing but hash, I'd probably want flour.
Sure.
I've never heard of that happening anywhere on our planet.
No. Well, 3,000 years to be bad.
Yeah.
I don't know this planet.
But, you know, flour without hash seems to happen a lot, to me at least. It's a separate thing. I mean, I got all of my information from literature and photography and old cinema. If I could find, like, oh, there's a hookah scene in an old Saji Ray movie or something.
Yeah.
You know, I'd track it down just to be like, what is pot smoking? How do people smoke pot?
Totally.
Kind of looking around to see where it was. So the ways I learned about hash, maybe that made it more exotic. But it did seem less prone to the sort of Americanization, McDonald'sization sort of it.
Yeah, sure.
It seemed, you know, culturally, maybe it seemed culturally more pure or something like that. To me, it's super meditative to do it. I actually smoked some hash with like some of my party bros back in San Diego, and it was just not, it was off kilter. It just, something didn't fit.
Hmm.
I don't know. So I get a little bit into it. But I mean, if that was all I had, I'd probably, you know, be like, oh man, I wish I could have a fucking joint.
Ooh, always, man. Grass is always greener.
So there you have it, folks. That's David's story, sharing a pipe with one another while we reflect on our decisions, emotions, and thoughts. You know, it's good to have people to bounce your ideas off of. What I call zoning out, David called hyper-focused. Which just illustrates how the words we use to describe an action really influence our judgment of those actions. What I really enjoyed is David's positive take on his transition narrative. And what I'll leave you with tonight, the linchpin, in my opinion, of his entire transformation lies in his positive approach to the unknown. There was just this little piece of encouragement that David said to himself that spoke so clearly to me. He didn't even realize that he was on the cusp of a transformation, but the idea came to him, and he said, and I quote, "Maybe it'll be great." And that approach, that outlook, is what can make all the difference. So when we engage in this larger, socially transformative project of a cannabis-inclusive modern society, I think we can all benefit as we take that first step into the unknown. I think it behooves us to encourage ourselves.
It'll be great.